This is Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. We begin with the latest about embattled OxyContin producer Purdue Pharma. In a legal motion made public today, the company is trying to dismiss a lawsuit brought by Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey. Purdue says Healey is distorting facts and making oversimplified claims in an effort to scapegoat the drug maker for the opioid addiction crisis. Healey's lawsuit accuses Purdue, its owners, and its top executives of deceiving patients and doctors about the risks of opioids. There are also reports today that Purdue is considering a bankruptcy filing. Washington Post reporter Katie Zesma has been covering the story and joins us now. Katie, always great to talk to you. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So, Katie, Purdue has filed this motion to dismiss. What are the main arguments that the company lays out in this motion?
So the main arguments are that Attorney General Healey has created a, quote, sensationalist and distorted narrative that ignores facts, end quote, in the lawsuit she filed last year. So, you know, their main argument is that they're making arguments that they are using in the slew of state and federal lawsuits filed against it in recent years, which is that it only controls a very small percent of the opioid market, about 2-3%, and that it's not responsible for overdose deaths from heroin and illicit fentanyl, which is a synthetic drug that's really been driving overdose deaths in recent years.
So these sound kind of similar, Katie, to what we've seen in other filings. And you mentioned a slew of lawsuits. I think the number is something like 1,600. Have those arguments been effective in other jurisdictions?
Well, we haven't figured that out yet. So what we have is there's a major lawsuit in Cleveland. It's a huge federal lawsuit that has consolidated a lot of the state and local claims against Purdue Pharma and opioid suppliers up and down the supply chain, opioid companies up and down the supply chain. We will really see a test of this in May when a lawsuit brought by the Oklahoma Attorney General is scheduled to go to trial. And that's really thought to be the first time that, you know, these arguments will be heard. They are the first time they'll be heard by a jury. And it's really the first time that arguments from both sides will be heard and we can see their efficacy.
Can you do a fact check for us here, Katie? The company is saying that it has complied with all of the FDA's rules and regulations. Is that the case or is that up for debate?
Well, in 2007, Purdue had to go into a consent agreement where they were fined $600 million. A few people went to prison, and after that, they had to really comply with stringent FDA regulations about the marketing of their opioids. Attorney General Healey is saying that they did not. That after 2007, there were a number of advertisements and kind of false marketing that was out there that violated that agreement, and Purdue saying that is not true.
We've seen also some internal emails come up in this case that Healey argues really shows a certain amount of recklessness and callousness. I'm thinking of one in particular, Katie, which highlights a press report about a number of deaths attributed to opioid overdoses and a company executive saying, you know, that wasn't too bad. The company in this filing is pushing back and saying that's being mischaracterized. Can you explain the context they're trying to put around that note?
They are. So the context around that particular email was that, you know, one email from a member of the Sackler family, which controls Purdue, and really Attorney General Healey is alleging that this family helped set the opioid crisis in motion. This email referred to a federal prosecutor who reported 59 deaths from OxyContin in one state. And Healey notes that another member of the family wrote back and said that's not too bad, it could have been worse. And Purdue is saying that the email refers to a New York Times story about the abuse of OxyContin and that the email writer was referring to the, quote, nature of recent press coverage and not overdose deaths. That is just one of a number of emails that came out through the attorney general's suit. You know, others that, you know, were about, as parents were writing to Purdue Pharma about children who have died of OxyContin overdoses and as prosecutors are reporting increases in deaths. There was an email from Richard Sackler, a member of the family, that said, you know, we have to hammer on the abusers in every way possible. And there are other emails, you know, to that extent, in that vein. And Purdue is basically saying that the Commonwealth has a weak legal theory and that they're basically trying to mischaracterize emails.
And Katie, what about these reports today from multiple news outlets, including yours, that Purdue is thinking about declaring bankruptcy? How could that affect all these court proceedings that are going on?
Well, we know that it's one option that's potentially on the table for them. And, you know, bankruptcy lawyers that we've talked to said that, you know, civil litigation against the company would halt as soon as it declares bankruptcy. So that is one thing that could absolutely affect the trials. And it would be, you know, difficult for a plaintiff to secure funds in bankruptcy court proceedings. So, you know, it is you know, something that the company, it's an option. They have, you know, are looking at numerous options, but it's unclear, you know, if and when it will actually happen.
And Radio Boston did ask Purdue Pharma about those reports that it's contemplating bankruptcy, and the company issued the following statement, quote, as a privately held company, it has been Purdue Pharma's longstanding policy not to comment on our financial or legal strategy. We are, however, committed to ensuring that our business remains strong and sustainable. We have ample liquidity and remain committed to meeting our obligations to the patients who benefit from our medicines, our suppliers, and other business partners, end quote. Katie, in the moments we have left, what are you watching for next? Is it just to see whether they do, in fact, file for bankruptcy and that's a game changer or something else?
I think right now what we're looking toward is whether these cases that are these thousands of cases that are in numerous courts around the country are going to settle or go to trial. In the Cleveland case, the federal case, the judge has specifically said that he wants a settlement in this case. You know, the talks about it are under a gag order, but I think that is what, you know, we're looking for now is to see, you know, if especially this Oklahoma case, if it goes to trial at the end of May, if it settles, and if the other cases, you know, end up with a settlement agreement sooner rather than later.
All right. That's the Washington Post's Katie Zesma. Katie, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
All right. For more, let's turn now to Dr. Aaron Kesselheim. He's an associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and a core faculty member in the Harvard Medical School Center for Bioethics. Dr. Kesselheim, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So I know you've done a lot of work in the field of prescription drugs and regulatory practices. So for starters, I'm just curious what you make of these lawsuits against Purdue for their alleged role in the opioid epidemic.
Well, I mean, I do think that there is a lot of evidence going back now, you know, back to when OxyContin was first approved that marketing by the pharmaceutical manufacturer, you know, overemphasized the benefits of the drug and underestimated the risks and contributed to overuse of the product.
Well, so, but if the risks are so high and they've been underplayed, why is OxyContin still on the market? I mean, this is one of the points that Purdue makes in their motion to dismiss, saying, look, it's even still covered by Medicaid, for that matter.
Well, I mean, it's on the market because it's an effective drug, and you know there are a lot of people who suffer from pain who could benefit from it. So, I mean, I think that you know, in certain you know appropriate clinical circumstances, it can provide a lot of benefits to patients. So, I don't think that there's any necessarily a problem with it having to be taken off the market because it's inherently dangerous. I think it's a matter of trying to figure out the right circumstances in which it needs to be prescribed.
But if I'm hearing you right, though, you're saying that both things can be true and that Purdue's argument here seems to be in absolutes. In other words, the fact that it is still on the market, the fact that it is still covered by Medicaid doesn't necessarily mean that it wasn't overmarketed or that its risks were not underplayed.
That's right.
Now, Purdue also says in its motion to dismiss that they have followed all FDA regulations, including those warning labels that address high dosages for an extended period of time. So I'm curious whether you put any of the blame at the FDA's feet.
Well, sure. I mean, I think that there are some ways that the labeling maybe could have been clearer. But I mean, I think the essential point is that the FDA's decisions is not the end of the story. You know, the FDA has thousands of drugs that it has to oversee, and the organization that has primary responsibility about making sure that the risks of their product are accurately being characterized and that the drug is being appropriately prescribed is the manufacturer, which is has the most control over what's in the labeling, has the most direct ability to alter what's in the labeling or has the most direct control over the conversation about the product by virtue of the marketing they undertake.
And the FDA, of course, does have to approve the drug initially, but its oversight does extend beyond that. And I'll just read a little bit from the FDA's own website, which gives us a sense of what it considers its public charge to be. And it says that the FDA is responsible for protecting the public health by assuring the safety, effectiveness, quality, and security of human and veterinary drugs, vaccines, and other biological products and medical devices, end quote. And so, Dr. Kesselheim, you know, is it up to the FDA to make sure that after a drug like OxyContin is approved, that it then is also prescribed properly in the years that follow?
Well, the FDA doesn't. The FDA obviously controls whether or not a drug is approved for the market, but it doesn't control physician prescribing practices. And physicians can prescribe drugs for any purpose they decide along with their patient. And physician prescribing can be heavily influenced by the types of marketing and promotion that they're exposed to. So, although it is true that the FDA approves drugs when it believes that the benefits of the drug outweigh the risks. After a drug's on the market, as knowledge about the drug and risks about the drug evolve, it's the manufacturer really that's on the front line of learning about those emerging information, and then is in the best and most direct position to respond to that and react to it.
Well, so that makes a degree of sense, Dr. Kesselheim, but I just wonder if that system is broken. I mean, does that make sense? Because I'm mindful that these are not charities. I mean, this is a private company that's fundamentally motivated by profit. So, I mean, is it smart to expect them to really take the lead in researching and tracking the safety of these drugs?
Well, I agree, and I think that is a challenge, and one of the reasons why in a lot of cases, not just in the opioid market, but in with other drugs as well, emerging risks, were not identified as quickly as they could be. And since 2007, actually, there have been, the FDA was given some additional powers to try to be more proactive about identifying risks. But again, the amount of funding that it has for this purpose is vastly inferior to the responsibility that it has. And so I think that the FDA could definitely use more power and more funding to try to, better fulfill its mission. But in the meantime, we have to, it's the manufacturers that are responsible, and when they don't, live up to their responsibility, then lawsuits like the one that you were talking about that Maura Healey was bringing can try to hold manufacturers and bring to light activities that they undertook that were inappropriate and hold them responsible when they didn't make good choices, but instead were making choices that were driven by their desires to increase their profit margins.
Dr. Aaron Kesselheim is Associate Professor of Medicine at Harvard Medical School and a core faculty member in the Harvard Medical School Center for Bioethics. Dr. Kesselheim, thanks again for your time today.
My pleasure.
Stay with us. Coming up, the dispute between the United States and Canada over the lucrative fishing waters in the Gulf of Maine. I'm Callum Borchers. This is Radio Boston.